It's good to be with you today. I am a little bit hoarse, as you can tell. I didn't just get more manly overnight. I'm already as manly as you can get. Yeah. Also, I did not turn into Isaac Hayes. These are things you might be wondering this morning. So if I have a coughing fit in the middle, I apologize. I love Baptism Sunday because I think baptism is a phenomenal thing to talk about, particularly as Baptists. I mean, we are a Cross Creek Baptist church, so we ought to talk about baptism a good bit. There's some things you might not know about baptism. When I was in seminary, we had to have a class on being a pastor, and one of the things you do in that class was practice baptizing people. So we all went from the seminary and took a walk to the Baylor Student Life Center, which is, you know, this phenomenally gorgeous building to work out in. And there went into the swimming pool, and everyone in class had to baptize the smallest person and the largest person. The largest person was about 6'4", about 300 pounds. And it's like doing a front squat. You put them down, and then it's like you're here, and it's all like, it's all in the legs. It's like a shove up. The lightest person was very small, and if you've ever baptized or been around a child being baptized, the thing you don't know about, the thing you learn is that they float. So when you try to baptize a child, their legs just pop up and they just kind of lay on the water. And then you feel bad because you really have to just shove them down. The first baptism I ever did was a girl named Angelina. She was a youth in Rosebud, Texas, where I was a youth minister. And I did what so many pastors do when they perform baptisms. I wore waders like you would go fishing in. What they don't tell you about that is that if you bend over too much, the water comes in. And so I baptized Angelina, and the water came in. I was also preaching that Sunday. I was the youth minister. I didn't normally preach, and I was in a suit. And it was a very fast hair-drying session in the back, and I got most of it dry. Baptism's kind of a funny thing. When I was baptized twice. I'll let you figure out what that says about me, but I remember one time, my friend and I, we kind of just swam out of the baptistry because it's, for a kid, it's like a pool. It's something you just can take off. And of course, at Cross Creek, we baptize in a swimming pool, so it's actually appropriate to swim out of it. Baptism is a thing that has a lot of humor around it. It can be very funny. And yet it's this profound moment when we do, as Scott said earlier, begin. At the root of baptism is the symbol of water. And if you stop and think about it, water is a very important symbol for the people of Israel. The reason Isaiah, when he writes to the people in exile in Babylon, talks about moving through the water is because that's what they did when they became Israel. We like to think about Israel as being like this formed people, but really we know that Israel became the nation in the Exodus from Egypt. They were all there as kind of a people. They were all there as Abraham's children. They were all there as slaves in Egypt. But it was not an official nation. It was not officially God's people until they were called out. And in calling out, they crossed the Red Sea and they crossed the Jordan River to enter the Promised Land. Crossing through water is an important motif, an important idea for the people of Israel. Water is dangerous. We go to Arkansas in the summers because the town we go to, Helena, West Helena, Arkansas, which I will never call just one of those, it's always both, is right next to the Mississippi River. And the community, which is deeply impoverished, one of the 20 poorest communities in the United States, has an above average number of drowning deaths because of inadequate instruction on swimming and proximity to a body of water. Water is dangerous. And if you've never experienced that, then you are probably smarter than me. You have never tried to hold your breath too long. Or you didn't watch Lonesome Dove at too young an age. I love Larry McMurtry. He's an amazing Texas author. But there is this scene in Lonesome Dove where Ricky Schroeder, I can't remember what his name is in the movie, but it's Silver Spoons. Ricky Schroeder is crossing the Brazos in the middle of water moccasin mating season, And so they're roiling and swarming in a ball. And poor little Ricky Schroeder, he tries to cross the Brazos only to be attacked by snakes. The lake I grew up going to was a portion of the Brazos that had been dammed up. It was a very mixed message for me as a kid. This is the lake where the snakes kill you. Let's go water skiing. Water is dangerous. I joke when we go to the beach, I have an abnormal fear of sharks. Statistically, I know I'm just about as likely to win the $1.3 billion Powerball as I am to be eaten by a shark. It's very close statistically. But here's the thing. Sharks are made to eat things in water. I was not made to be in water. I mean, I swim pretty well. But the sharks want to eat me because I am tasty. I'm sure. Water often stands for the unknown. You can see clearly enough most of the time. But in water, things become murky. It's a great metaphor for the messiness of life. It's a metaphor about we don't know what happens when you go under. We just hope you come back up. And yet at the same time, it's what we rely on to clean ourselves every day. Water is an important concept, both theologically and practically. It is necessary, it is unknown, it is troublesome, it is beautiful, it is serene, it is powerful. It creates canyons. When you really meet water, you emerge changed. Behind our house, back in the woods, not on our property, but on somebody's property, there's a creek that runs, and it's deep enough to go play in. And so we will often go down and play in the creek. And there's a thing you learn when you're with kids who didn't dress appropriately to play in the creek, that doesn't keep them from playing in the creek. There's a little creek that when it rains runs right out here beside the church. It's like a little drainage area. And there are probably 50% of the Sundays that has rained. My kids say, can I go get in the creek? And here's what happens, even if you don't get your clothes wet. You get in, and let's say you do take your shoes off because you're smart. You still can't get them back on quite right, can you? Because your feet are wet, and you're trying to put socks on, and they just don't work right. And at the same time, when we realize that you just can't be in water and emerge, even in minor ways, unchanged, somehow, we still sometimes emerge from our baptism unchanged. I want to point one other thing out about this passage from Isaiah before we talk about the baptism of Jesus. It's very important to note that in the Hebrew, in this section of Isaiah, that there is a link directly between the creation of the nation of Israel and the deliverance of God's people. And it is put in the second person singular, meaning that God is speaking to everyone. God is saying time and time again, when you're in the water, I will deliver you. Not just when you're traveling in mass as a people, but when you are facing the water, I will deliver you. Time and time again, the word that is so important is the word I. See, your deliverance is in God's hands, not your ability to dodge snakes and swim fast. And that's good, because it means that someone other than you is caring for you. It's the scene we find ourselves in when we do arrive to the baptism of Jesus. The Jordan River is a river that can be very shallow or very high, depending on flood season. If you looked at the front of your worship guide, it has a very weird picture of baptism. It's probably a much more accurate picture of baptism. When we baptize people backwards. It symbolizes death to the old way of life and being raised in the newness of life. But you don't baptize people in real shallow water that way. It just doesn't work. You go face forward. It's a much more humbling pose. It requires bent knees and bent backs and bowed heads. I love Luke's telling of this baptism story. The baptism story appears or is referenced in all four Gospels. And there's not a lot of stories that are that way. It's important enough to the early church that every single Gospel writer talks about it or alludes to it at the beginning of Jesus' public ministry. In Luke and the other synoptics, it's what occurs right before Jesus goes to the wilderness in order to be tempted by the tempter. But what I like about Luke's telling is that Jesus doesn't show up with some aura around him and is noticed by John in the distance. In the Gospel of John, John is standing there with a couple of his disciples, and Jesus walks in and he sees Jesus from like half a mile off, or at least like, 100 feet, one of those. And he's like, oh, here's the one I said. This is the guy I've been talking about. In Luke's gospel, the image is that there's a bunch of people lined up to be baptized, and Jesus just happens to be one of them. And if you read it, it says, once they were all baptized, and Jesus too. Jesus didn't get any preferential treatment at this baptism. He just shows up in line, waiting to be one of us. And then he's baptized. And when he comes up, only in Luke's gospel does this occur, but it's so important. He is in prayer. He doesn't just pop out of the water and expect life to be miraculously different. He's delivered from the water by his cousin John, and he is in prayer. And it is in the midst of that prayer that the Spirit descends upon him bodily like a dove and says, "You're my son." How many of you remember your baptism? How many of you were baptized in a creek? There's a few. I think we as Baptists ought to do a better job of remembering, recalling, reliving our baptism. Because there are days when it seems like maybe we didn't get so clean in those waters. There are days when it seems like maybe we didn't emerge, whether you were dunked or sprinkled or splashed by a car wash. We take all the baptisms here. There are days when maybe it seems like it wasn't enough, when the waters are still too high and you are still not ready. Hey, guess what? You're not. But God is. Before Jesus enters into the wilderness, before Jesus begins his public ministry of teaching, he is baptized and he prays and he waits until the Spirit descends. Even the Son of God relies on God's Spirit before moving forward. I love the story of baptism because it gives us a chance to say, once upon a time I was doing this, and then I started life anew. We don't believe it saves you. We don't believe it's the thing that keeps you saved. But we believe it's a public way to begin your story again. Once I was this way, and now I'm saved. Once I was lost, but now I'm found. Coming out of the water, entering in and coming out, we need to remember it's dangerous. It changes us. It opens us up to relying on someone besides ourselves to believe that God is working in us and through us and around us, and that God has delivered us and will deliver us again. Today, as we move into a time of response, there's a bowl. I was going to call it a bucket. It's a bowl of water up here. Maybe you have forgotten that you're living a different life than the one you had before. Maybe you've never experienced the public testimony of baptism. Maybe you doubt that God can still deliver. There are people in this room who will tell you that God delivers. You're invited to come up, dip your hands, and remember the waters of your baptism. To remember that God has changed you, and that the God who has, does, and will, not because of what you bring, but because of who God is. Amen.